This is Kenya, the number one opera in the world, according to Foreign. You're watching Foreign Channel, also known as the number one existent fan in the world.
Right, this is going to be another episode of Talk to Thorin, and my guest for this is going to be Saw, who is the coach of Heroic, and obviously previously worked with Ents. So I thought what we'd do is, I said this to you when I messaged you, is I thought the idea is we'd just do an interview, which is sort of like just a bit of your background, some of your thinking, because even though I'm sure you've done the odd interview on HLTV and websites like that when they ask you at the events, I do think the problem is that type of interview tends to be more like day-to-day. It's like what's happening in this match, the next, you know, who just joined the team last week, what's going to happen next tournament or whatever. And when I do my big reflections ones, those are normally covering like, you know, 10 years of people's careers. So this is sort of like in the middle a little bit. Because I actually feel like even though people know your teams, and they know most of the squads you've worked with, I don't feel like you're as much of a public facing figure. Let's just start there. Do you see yourself as, are you a guy who, do you feel like you do media? Do you try to get your name out there? I mean, I do think in a weird way, it almost is a little bit like sports now. So I don't think in the modern day, it's just about how good you are at the job of coaching. I think some of it is you've got to sort of like sell yourself in a way, right? I mean, if you see the people who are sort of the big names, I think they have almost like added value to their career in a way, even if actually maybe, for all we know, maybe you're as good as them at coaching, but they've sold the idea to the public and the teams that they're the best coaches. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's quite an important aspect of the job of the industry to be out there and show yourself. And well, to be fair, I'm not that kind of typical guy who goes out and pushes himself to be in the spotlight so much. So it's not really me, it's not really my personality like that. But I do understand the importance of that, and that's why also I will go for interviews, I will do this kind of stuff, and I could do it even more to push myself out there. Maybe in the future, who knows? I don't know. But right now, it doesn't seem like something that I would want to force too much. Because in the end, I do want to be focused on the coaching part. I want to help the team. I want to make the team the best it can be. And well, I want my work to speak for me more than, you know, me going for some spotlight so much.
If people look back on your career, maybe people only got to know you in these last few years with teams like Ents, obviously now much bigger with Heroic because you were like one of the big signings too. But I think people might be shocked to realize, Saw, that you played for a long, long, long time, just not at the level that, like the top pro level where people would know. So were you someone where did you view yourself the whole time? If I go back to like 2012 or something, whenever you began, 2014 or something, would you have considered yourself pro? Were you semi-pro? How did you envision what your career was?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say because I didn't exactly play in Tier 1 or anything like that. So I guess a nice way to put it is like when I was starting to get some kind of salary from playing, that's when I could call myself a pro, or more like at least more than a semi-pro. But even then, I was part-time school, part-time playing and these kind of things. So it was never like Tier 1. It was more the lower levels. I think the best ranking my team was ever was like 21 or something in HLTV, those kind of things. So it's somewhere there, but I guess when you get salary, you can call yourself a pro at least some sort.
Sure. There are a few players from the early days I do want to ask about, just because since you played in the Finnish scene for so long, you actually know a lot of names that maybe some people don't know. So one that I wanted to actually ask initially about, you played in the very early days, was the player Juho. And if people don't know, this is a player where, as far as I know in the scene, he was nearly always like this far from being like more of a famous player than just in Finland, right? He was nearly always in those like teams that they were trying to make around Ents and all those squads where they're trying to get the right five to get. He just wasn't in the most famous ones. Who was this guy? Was he a prospect?
Yeah, I think he was always like mechanically super skilled, and his understanding of the game and the nuances of the game was also like pretty good, I would say. It was more about the mental part and how to handle maybe stress or how to play in a team environment and these kind of things. Because I think I played with him like on a couple of different occasions, and it always came down to the same things, kind of where there was just something wrong, and then he or the team couldn't handle it really, and we couldn't make the most out of it. But like his playing skill, like talent, is just, he is good, and well, it's kind of like a wasted talent in a way.
Is it the case that Saul was always the in-game leader of his team? So was there a specific period when he took the role over? Were you doing this in these early teams, if I go back like 10 years?
Yeah, I was always the in-game leader, so I was playing Source back in the days and then transitioned to CSGO, and I was the in-game leader in, I would say, 90-95% of the teams. Like, there was maybe a couple of months here and there where I wasn't the guy in Source and then early CSGO, but then after that I was always in-game leading pretty much.
I feel like there's two types of player becoming game leader. You either do it because you actually genuinely are just a nerd who loves demos and things like that, or you do it because you just look around and you go, no one else is doing a good enough job, I'll just do it myself. And then you sort of learn the responsibility and all the skill. What type of in-game leader were you, do you think?
Well, I mean, I kind of think it was a mixed in a
Right.
sense, because well, I felt like back in the early days, like really early days, no one knew what to do in the server,
Oh,
so
sure.
it was just easier to try to tell them, okay, let's do this and let's do this and let's try to play like a team, and then that's where it started from. Like, it wasn't that we were five guys playing and then no one really wanted to be the IGL. Or like in a small sense, maybe sure, but not in a way that people usually think about it, I feel like. And then it also wasn't like I was pushing myself to be an in-game leader, but it just seemed in a way like a smart thing to do to make the team actually work and do more than we maybe could or should, and just play better than the other team by doing something together. And then that's how it started, I feel like.
If people don't know what some of the players you actually played with were the players who later on went with Alexi B, were in that very famous Ents team. So I actually want to ask about some of these guys. Like people, it's funny because now he's actually gone back into obscurity, but the player X7, the one who people remember won that clutch against Simple to stop him winning that 1v4 and going to the final of that major. This player was playing with you a long, long time before that. And I've heard something like when I did my interviews with other players who played with him, where they told me, saw that actually me people in the modern day, because they only know him in that famous Ents team, they actually have a very different perspective. Of him because they think of him as sort of like, you know, the player who takes all the bad roles and who has like the low frags, but you know, they have more impact than the rating shows. But I was told actually in the early days he was like a fragger, he was actually like a skilled player, this guy X7, right?
Yeah, I think in our team, like, what would it be, 2015, 2016 or something like that, before the Ents times, he was probably the highest performing player of our
Right.
team back then. And I mean, his positions were still more or less the same. Like, it was maybe a bit more mixed, but I mean, he was performing really well for his positions and he was fragging well, and it wasn't like he was the bitch of the team or something
Right.
like that. So he was a bit different, but still in similar positions, more or less. So that's why he also got into Ents, because that team was built by role from the best players of Finland back then.
Do you actually see players like him? Is that like an example of a player that has made a conscious choice to be like more sacrificial or be part of the team or be a role player, whatever term you want to use? Do you see that as like a player who's consciously chosen that?
I think some players do choose it because it also fits their personality in a way, that
Sure.
they do want to help other players to make them better. They also accept more things from, like, other players are telling them, do this for me, and then they will accept it. But I think it also is a personality thing where they then, it makes it easier to fit into
Sure.
that role. It might not be like a thing where you are playing for fun and then you're like, I really want to be a support player
Sure.
in the best
Sure.
team in the world. Nothing like that, I guess, but I think it, in some sense, some players do, well, they do fit the role better, and then they do also go for the role as well.
I mean, the thing is, though, the reason why I asked that question is I actually think to kind of get an insight into your coaching philosophy of CS, I think it's an interesting topic because one thing when I see people construct rosters that I think they do all the time wrong, saw, is they'll have like a discussion with like a prospective player, someone they want to be in the roster or is on their little list. And when they have the conversation, because they'll sort of almost say to this player, like, you know, we've got all these big names, so you know, how we're going to make the roles fit. There'll always be that like star player who used to be like the guy in his team that got all the spots and roles. They'll always be that guy who thinks like, but I want to win and be in a top team. So they think like, well, I can just choose to do the bad roles and you know it'll be okay because we'll win. And I always think that's the most dangerous player to put in that spot. Like, put it this way, this isn't a great example of that, but like I'll give you an example. I do think that like if I'll give a weird example for people. So Nexa just got kicked from G2, right? Believe it or not, whether you think Nexa was good in G2 or not, one thing I can totally understand as to why they might have recruited him is if you know him as a personality, he's got a very good personality to be like a guy who's a role player, and he's not going to demand all the resources, and he's not going to complain if he has a bad, like that. Even though you might not like the performance, if you think he should be kicked, you can see why you would do that recruitment. I actually think this is one area where fans sometimes they'll just go and look at HLTV rating, and they're not sure what they're seeing. Like, should they recruit the star player that's going to do big freckles? Will he even do that rating, or is this guy who has the low rating any good? I feel like people miss that aspect, right? It's like, it's not just your skills, like your sense, also kind of your attitude, or does it even fit your personality as a player, the role that you're being given in the game, right?
Yeah, I would say there's quite many aspects to it. Like, you want to think about the personality and the chemistry between like different players and how it fits the team, but then just role by role, like, and also how passive, how aggressive your playing style is as a player, all these things to consider, of course, and then what makes the best package, so to say. And of course, like, a lot of super teams, so to call, it hasn't exactly worked out like people would like to see it work out in the end. But it is just, it's a matter of resources, it's a matter of making it work inside the team, because in the end you can't have five people in the top of the scoreboard, for example, and someone will have to be at the lower end of it. And then, of course, how do you, well, there needs to be a measurement of performance somehow, of course, but then how do you balance it between the team, and what kind of things are you getting from different players, which might show or might not show in the scoreboard, but yeah.
Right, one of the players that was in Ents, but he was the coach, is obviously Twister, and he used to be a player, and he played with you for many years. So who was he as a player, and when he was a player, was he the sort of person that you could have envisioned becoming a coach?
Yeah, and he was a coach for me as well at one point of time.
Oh, right, but, okay.
Like, after we were playing together first, and then he became a coach, I think it might have been only like a couple of months or something like that, but still. But yeah, I mean, he was a player who was doing a lot of things for the team. He was IGL also, like, in the past teams. I think he was IGL with me also for maybe like 2 weeks. We tried it or something just shortly. But we played together for a while, and he was doing a lot of like things for the team. Maybe not the highest skill or fragging power, but doing a lot of important things for the team, like helping people out, bringing out ideas, having good communication, good initiative, and these kind of things, what helps the team.
Right, one of the players that I actually feel like from your era, especially when you had like those iGame and that sort of era of team, if people remember, that I think people have forgotten this guy, sadly, is the player Zori, the AWPer. And I actually do think, even though it's like a mad theory, I actually think part of the problem is, one, he didn't get famous enough, but also his name just looks too similar to Zorty, the Russian AWPer. And I actually think, for real, people get confused by stuff like that when names are similar and you're both AWPers. You're both actually on the rise at the same time. But the reason I bring him up, sort of, is I actually remember watching this guy, obviously, when you guys were in Flashpoint and some of the tournaments around then, and this was a good player, actually. Like, I actually thought this player was going to be one who one day did play like an Ents when they were a finished team or something. He looked like the obvious player in your team that could like move up to the next level. What would you say about this player?
I think he was really skilled, and he was like a really good player, especially for our team. And he's also a player, I knew him all the way back from Source, and we have like a long history together, and he fit our team really well. And he's like, he has all the AWP routines. He plays the AWP like you're supposed to be playing the AWP. He does everything correct in that way. He has all the habits of the AWPer, so to say. Maybe the biggest thing he's lacking is initiative, that he might not be super active. And he's not your typical AWPer who is like taking space and doing things by himself, but he is more of a type of guy who, he might be holding an angle, and then he will do the things you ask him, like, especially me as an IGL. It was easy to work with him because he would do the things I wanted him to do. But the initiative part was lacking a bit, which I think later on became his downfall a bit in the later versions of Havu.
Right.
And he ended up getting benched at some point, which I do think still was a bit of a mistake by them, to be honest, to bench him.
Because on the topic of the role of the AWPer, I always feel like it's obvious that if you're a casual fan, you're just going to go for the guy with the flashy, you know, hits all the crazy shots and then also. But I always think, especially for a coach or in-game leader, the AWPer you want is the really just consistent guy. You just want the guy who hits all the stable shots. Like you say, you can sort of predict what they're going to do in the game or where they're going to go, where they like to be, right? Do you like that sort of player?
Yeah, I mean, personally, Well, I do like that also. I do want there to be a bit of this, like, well, star power, this fragging power, this
Right.
surprise effect. But of course, the stable part is really important. You have to have an AWPer who you can trust will lock down sights, will lock down angles when needed, and then your rifles can play somewhere elsewhere in the map. And then also, like, on the T side, you will know if you get him to an after plant or something, he will just lock down the sight. He will win you the round. But of course, you want your AWPer also sometimes to go for the entries more aggressive, taking those risks. That sometimes it's a high risk, high reward kind of situation, but that's something you need. Goes for T side, goes for CT side, like both ways. But as a general thing, I do think the stable part is super important. You are getting the most expensive gun in the game, so use it, but don't go and throw it around for pistols, you know, on anti-eco and do something stupid with that. So.
One of the players you had in Havu, who I feel like must be sort of at least fitting this billing, had to be the player Slowey. I actually thought he was like a great example of a player who's like an impact player. Like he's just trying to make plays. If people don't know, he's kind of a hybrid. He could AWP, he could rifle. He seemed like he was just a guy who could like aggressive playmaker or something. What would you say?
Yeah, he was that type of guy, and that was like the funny thing, especially back then when we had the double AWP in a lot of the maps. When the map pool was different, the AWP was fitting a lot better in different scenarios. So he would take up the second AWP, and then he would become the playmaker where Sore would have the main AWP somewhere. They would switch up positions also, so it wasn't like readable easily like that, I felt. But Slowey was the one going for more aggressive peaks. And then Sorevo might be somewhere else with his AWP, like locking down angles. And then that worked pretty well together. It was a weird dynamic in a way, because normally it might be the main AWPer who goes for this type of plays. But for us back then, it was Slowey doing a lot of this. And he was a player who took a lot of initiative, who has like a lot of reads, a lot of ideas, and he wants to put himself out there in the action.
As I mentioned, obviously you did yourself play for a long time. It's not like you were coaching this whole time. So when you were the player in Havu, and people might start to see you at tournaments like Flashpoint and in the sort of tier two scene in the qualifiers and stuff, as an in-game leader, right? From what I remember, people would just do that classic categorization. They'd just go like low fragging, but he's like a tactical in-game leader. And you know, if you look at the rounds, you can see he must be having an effect and making a call. Would you have disagreed with that sort of characterization? Who do you think you were when you were an in-game leader and a player?
I think it is pretty accurate, to be honest, because I did always like to build up the playbook, try to make it as diverse as you can, so there's not many reads, and there is many different options we can use against different teams. And then as individual part, I wasn't fragging, like it's a fact. But it was also a bad part of me where I wanted to do too much for the team, and I wasn't really thinking about individual form. Like, I was thinking about it way too little. I should have focused on it a lot more. And in that way, sure, I fit the coaching part a lot better because I'm not on the server then. But as a player, when I'm on the server as the fifth player, I need to be focused on individual skill. I need to perform in that way also. It can't be just working as a IGL. So that was a bit of a, well, maybe reflection after my career where I should have focused a bit more.
One thing I did find quite cool when you guys had your run to third place at that Flashpoint tournament, where actually on paper everyone would have had you coming like, I don't know, ninth place or something, way lower down, was if anyone goes back and watches these games, it's actually obvious that like actually Havu has some of the best tactics in the tournament. Like you guys look like you actually had a pretty comprehensive system. It all looked like you were always prepared for games, loads of the maps. You had a pretty good T side on. Right. The reason I bring this up, Saw, is it's not just that like usually at the lower tiers we're not used to teams being like structured, etc. But I would also say, if people don't know, one of the reasons why I've been like a massive fan of Alexei B is I've just noticed in traditionally Finnish Counter-Strike often lacks like the really tactical in-game leaders, and it tends to be more like at the beginning of the interview, like people just do it because someone has to be the in-game leader, and then they just go, you know, they sort of call a bit poggy so people can just have fun and do whatever they want. And the problem with that is like that's okay as a style, but it's not like compelling if you don't have the superstar players. You're gonna have like simple if you're gonna do that, you know, if you're gonna have some godlike super loose system. So would you agree? Were you someone always putting a lot of time into the tactical side? It seemed like it like pretty sweet. At this level, you were in Flashpoint. You were at the top, like a team getting paid loads of money. So it can't have just been like because we're at the top, we're doing it. Like you seem like you had a pretty professional approach.
Yeah, I was spending a lot of time like working on the strats and trying to develop what we had, what can we do better, and these kind of things. I would say it's nowhere near to the level what we have now, for example, or what we had in ends and what we have in Heroic, because there's all the coaching staff, there's all the players, so it's way more professional what we have now. And back then it was mostly me alone. Like, I felt like, sure, the other players are also watching demos, they are working, but it's nothing compared to nowadays. So it was different in that sense. But it was always an interest of mine to look for different strats, how different teams are playing, what's the meta, what's the effective way of playing the game right now, what's fitting against different teams, how can you counter different things with different, like, well, different options you have to counter different things that the other team is doing.
What would you say about, I've referenced it, this run you had at Flashpoint? People don't know the story. The story went that in Flashpoint, even though it was like a partnered league, a bit like Blast, where you have to buy into a spot. We had a couple of positions though, because we hadn't actually at the time signed all the teams. It was supposed to be like two more teams joined or something. We had a couple of open spots. And so what happened was you did like a qualifier. It was, you know, online into a LAN qualifier. Now, if people don't know, I will point out, the first qualifier was actually won by Big from fucking Germany. You obviously went on to be amazing that year. But the thing is, they chose to play in Pro League instead, obviously, because it's like a bigger tournament. So in the end, you guys got through. There was like the Chaos team from America got through or whatever. But as I referenced earlier, at the time, no one knew who fucking Hafu was, mate. Like, as I said, maybe if they watch like an online qualifier or they watch like a smaller DreamHack or something, they know who they are. But like, compared to some of the org names, this org was like, put it this way, Forrest and fucking Get Right were in this tournament, mate. You know, some pretty famous players and teams and stuff. Did you guys have any sense when you came to this tournament that you might actually be able to make a deep runner? If people don't know, not only did you come third and finish ahead, for example, of that North American Cloud 9 team, but mate, I actually thought you even could have been in the final. Like, it looked like you almost beat MIBR that first time. So did you have any sense coming to this event, like, we're gonna have a deep run, or we're actually one of the better teams? What was your mind state going in?
I think back then, I think we didn't talk about like really goals or any expectations for the tournament. And from what I remember, we didn't really even have a lot. It was just a good thing to get to a better tournament, try to perform as good as you can, and try to do well, show good things basically. I can't remember us having like a different kind of goals or this is the minimum level we want to do in this tournament. It always felt like we can do good things, but then you never know. And back then it was something like this, where I think it was Big, like you said, who dropped out, and then we got like the last spot or something like this. And it was a bit unsure for us back then. Okay, what's the situation? Should we go for this? Then we are going to be in the US for a long time. And
sure,
if we go there, then what happens with all the other tournaments? And what if we do bad in Flashpoint and then we'll miss out on every other tournament? And
sure,
what's the balance between that? But of course, it was the biggest tournament we had a chance to go for. So then we went for it in the end. And well, it was a good thing in the end.
Listen, even though the result was a good thing, I have to obviously ask, since you weren't a team that had like the same kind of travel that top pros do, where you get to go to all the big events, you go to China with the five-star hotel. Right, in this era, I doubt this team's been in that many big international tournaments. It must have sucked that all the COVID shit happened and you were just trapped in an apartment in LA, right? That part must have been a bit whack. When you hear you go to LA for a month, you think it's baller, don't you?
Yeah, that was a bit funny thing. Like, we get to the big tournament, we played one match in the studio,
yes,
against Mad Lions. We won that match, and then after that we were moved into Airbnbs and stuff, where we played the rest of the matches in full lockdown. And it was a bit of a shame, to be honest. It was a lot of good team bonding in those houses,
right?
But,
sure.
But other than that, I mean, a bit rough to be there in lockdown.
It was the end of this same year when you finally became coach events, even though, if people don't know, this is the end that obviously was transitioning from the Finnish players, you still had Dorto, etc. So the question I have is this. Was part of the Havu era part of what got people's attention? Did you already have connections? How did you end up becoming the coach events?
Well, I do think the players of NS especially knew me, and then it was also Twista who got the coach bug and
sure,
had the ban because of that. Like, I think it was out maybe during Flashpoint or something like that, like the news about it or something. And I had tried coaching like the year before that in Havu as well for what, maybe 2 months or something.
Right.
But then I came back as a player. But coaching was always something that was in my mind. And it was in my mind also during this time, like we made the Flashpoint run. Then I think after that there was some online tournaments. Then there was like a summer break. And we had to do a player change also at that time. And I do remember maybe back then also thinking about, okay, coaching. And then I thought, okay, let's play this like until the end of the year. and then I will think about it again, the coaching part, because it was always in the back of my head, and I was thinking, okay, when is the right time to do it? And then the ENS project, ENS approached me. It wasn't the end of the year, it was a bit before that. And back then I didn't plan to like change at that point, like in the middle of the season or anything. But at the same time, they also approached Doto from Havu. And then when Doto decided he wants to go, then I needed to make a decision. Okay, so are we gonna try to get a new player for Havu now and then continue the Havu project, and then I will continue playing, and then I will push back the decision to be a coach like for what could be potentially 6 to 8 months or 1 year or whatever it could be. But then in the end, I when also like Jens approached me at the same time, and then I just decided, okay, now is the time, so I'm gonna switch to coaching and went to Jens at that point. So it was like 2020 November, I think.
Right. You obviously worked with the team that long while they still had the old Finnish lineup, where it was literally the one that made the major final plus Sonny. And in fact, people don't know around this time was when even Yampi, the guy who now was in Valorant, where he had the VAC ban, but they just didn't care. Even he was playing the team. At the time, obviously, they were trying to be the best Finnish team. That wasn't that long while that happened before it switched to the Snappy line, but it starts to get more like the one fans probably know in the modern day that became became the ENS team that was doing all the great things last year. So what I would ask is this, is when you joined the team, was the initial plan, we're just going to stay a Finnish team and it's always going to be a Finnish team at ENS? Like, how did the decision come to go international?
Yeah, the original plan was to stay as a Finnish team, and I knew they had problems with the Finnish roster, like there was problems with the players and their relationships. And I had individual talks with everyone before I joined, because I wanted to make sure I wouldn't join a dead project or anything like that. It was clear from the start that Sergei wouldn't be there. He would play the last turn. There was like two online
All right.
tournaments we had to play, so Sergei would play one of those. But then the roster would be Alu, Sunny, Yampi, Doto, and the fifth man we didn't have. So Sergei would play the tournament, and then we would figure out the fifth guy, who then ended up being Sadix at that time. So then that was the roster, and that was supposed to be the roster for 2021, where we played like at the end of 2020, we played like the last online tournament, something. It didn't go too well, like both of them, but it was kind of whatever. So I knew the situation like that. I had talked with everyone, everything. Well, things didn't seem perfect, but things seemed something like we can work with. But then, of course, what happened like during that player break, everything exploded, and then the full project exploded. Like, there was the clash between Alu and Sunny back then, and Sunny left the team. And then that's when we started thinking about going international. Like, what are the options at this point? Okay, so what are the options of players we can get from Finland, and what are the options we can get from, well, going international?
When you guys made this international squad, it's funny because if people go and look at some of the names, they're going to think it's obvious, like, yeah, great pickups. But at the time, these names were like crazy pickups. Like, I remember when Snappy was even added, everyone was like, isn't he washed? Wasn't that like fucking years ago he was a top IG? Like, no one was. I know now everyone considers him one of the best, but at the time, actually, he was kind of like a gamble name. And then Spinks at the time, people have to remember he hadn't done anything yet. Like, even when he was in that Contact team, Contact was one of the fucking bad teams in Flashpoint. Like, that. I do remember Snappy when he was in Contact telling me, like, the Spinks guy's really skilled or something. But you also do hear those stories about a lot of players, you know, not everyone makes it, not everyone develops their game. When you pick these two players up, did you know much about them? Did you have a sense of what sort of players you're getting?
Snappy and Spinks. Well, I knew more about Snappy, so I knew about his history as an in-game leader, and that was the first pickup because, well, it's really important you get an in-game leader, and I wanted someone who has like a similar vision to me. And we had a lot of talks with Snappy back then about like how we see the game, how we should approach the game, and what can we do. So he was the first guy, like after the Finnish guys, because Alu remained and Doto remained. That was also a bit of a, well, we needed to see what players can we keep from the old roster and what's the smartest thing to do. But Snappy was the first one that we picked up, and then he also had a say in the rest of the players, because then it was a lot of talks going back and forth, like who should we get now when we have Snappy in the roster, we have Alu, and then we had Doto as the Finnish guy, well, the two Finnish guys. Then who's the last two guys? And Snappy had a lot of say about Spinks being the guy. And then Duha was, of course, the last piece to round out the roster back then. I do remember watching Spinks demos also back then, and I could see the mechanical skill he had. It wasn't like super assuring in a way that I would like straight up go, let's go get Spinks 100% now, because Duha was in the list before him. So back then, everyone wanted to get Duha into the team, or the full
Right.
team. I was convinced of him. We got him in, and then, or actually, we didn't even get him like straight up. I think there was some negotiations about buyout, and at some point, it looked like we might not get him. Then it looked like we can get him, and so on. This kind of normal stuff, but then we ended up getting him, and then Spinks was more or less the last piece, and he was like the most inexperienced player coming from Contact, but turned out great in the end. And he was always like a super hardworking guy, super mentally stable, also stable in game, because even when you look at him play, like even nowadays, like it's not like he goes for some play crazy flicks or crazy things like that, but he's just stable with his aiming, his crosshair placement, everything like that. So he was that already back then. But of course, the experience part was missing, some of the initiative part, some of these like the small things that comes with just playing more, playing with different players, different team environments, and these kind of things.
One thing I would be interested to ask you about in terms of your relationship with Snappy, as you were describing it there, is I can actually see where there would be some shared ground because all the teams he's ever been in, I have always seen as teams where they do rely on having structure and people having like proper players they make. It's not just like, here's a star player, let's just like move out the way and let him just do everything, you know? Like, if people don't know, like pretty much all of Snappy's teams, he's a guy who does put his time in the demos and trying to figure out little angles and thinking about things at night when the match has ended and stuff. Did you two hit it off very well early on? Where are the shared ground areas, would you say?
Yeah, I do remember some of the talks back then we had, like, for example, on Nuke, that we were going through different strats we can do, and then different, like, small adjustments inside the strats and all these kind of things. And we were seeing the map very similarly. There were similarities in train also and different maps. Of course, it's not all one to one, but it was something that we could agree on. We could see that, okay, there's this option, there's this option, there's this option. So let's pick this one and let's pick this one. It wasn't like black and white, so we only have to do this. This is the right way to do it. But we could see that there's different ways to do different things. And then we just need to agree on something to find the best thing for the team. So those kind of things. And I do remember the talks. That's probably like the longest talks. I'm not sure if it would be even possible, like nowadays, with everyone having contracts and everything like this, if we bring out an IGL or something to have like these talks, because it was multiple hours we were
All
talking
right,
and
okay.
kind of theory crafting, even though there was no contract or anything. So it was just figuring out how we think about the game. But yeah, mostly we were agreeing on these things, and then it seemed like a good fit. So he was like he was the number one option back then, and then we got him, so it was a good thing for us.
There's another side to Snappy's personality I want to ask you about, though, and see what you think, which is, this will sound weird, but because I do talk shows, a lot of, like, content online, obviously the best discussions usually is when there's, like, a slight disagreement or you're trying to explain yourself to someone, you know, and you can have back and forth and you can make lots of points and stuff. And what I would say is this, as a result, people might think I don't like people who disagree with me, but that's actually not true. I actually love when people disagree with me, but they have to do it in, like, a polite way. If they do it like you're an idiot and you know nothing, then that's not a fun way because then you're not actually discussing the point. You just insult each other, right? And if people don't know Snappy, I actually think it might sound weird, but in his own way, is one of the most disagreeable people I've ever met. So, because like the joke is, like, no matter what opinion I would have, he would just sort of be like, yeah, but and then he'd give like a totally different, he'd have some other take on it. And I feel like he's one of those people. I do feel like, by the way, this sort of person feels like they're very suited to be an in-game leader, though, because it's always trying to battle over ideas and see is there another angle to something, or do I have an edge on something. What would you say? Do you see this side of his personality? Do you think, would you agree?
Yeah, I've seen it quite many times. I would say it's this kind of stubbornness he has. It's both good and bad, because like he is a good leader, he's a good in-game leader, and then it's also partly because he's stubborn, so he's not giving up on his ideas, so he wants to push for it, and he wants to also challenge like that a bit. But I think our relationship, it was always like, well, it was pretty clear, it was pretty easygoing, and he's a logical person also, so it's
Sure.
easy to understand him. And he's not disrespectful,
Yeah.
like you said, so his approach is not like he wants to have his way just for ego or something like that. So he's actually saying it because he believes in it.
He's
It's
also making great
logical.
points too, right? Like you say, like he's not
Yeah.
just disagreeing for the sake of it. He always usually has a good angle on it too.
Yeah, exactly. So he is that kind of person, and it was easy to get along with him. And well, the relationship and the balance we always had from the start, it also came from the organization, from ends, was that the head coach will have the last say. But
All
of
right.
course, I'm also the type of guy, I want to listen to all the players, and him as the IGL, he had a big say, big word. So I would always listen to him. And because we also see things similarly, we could agree on things. And it's not always even like if I think, okay, my thing might be the better way to go around here. But as the IGL, you need to also feel the game, and especially when it comes to these in-game things. Sometimes I would let him have, okay, let's have your way, let's try it out and see how it goes. And sometimes it would turn out, okay, it's working fine. Let's continue. Let's not change anything. Even though in the beginning I might think it's not the best way to go about it. And then some other times it might be that I'm like, okay, let's do this thing the way I say it, because I can't see it the other way. Let's just do it. And then we do it. And it's a balance like this where we can have conversations, we can talk about things, and then we end on a solution. But of course, both sides need to be, well, more or less happy with the solution, and we can work with that. And I think that's one of the reasons it worked well with us, like in ends.
Since it ends, some of the success appeared to come from good scouting, like picking players at the lower level, like the Sphinxes of the world, bringing them up and then developing them as players. Obviously, a lot of the discussion people have had outside the team is like, who's doing the scouting? Like, this is brilliant work. So some people wonder, is it someone else in the org? Is it you? Is it Snappy? Right? I'm going to actually ask that question quite naively, but I want to just add in. I have heard for some of these players, for example, like Snappy's maybe the one who found them or recommended them, but I imagine it's also a process where, as you'll say, it's not like he decides, like you make the decision, right? So, did you scout some players? Did he scout some players? What was the process like?
Yeah, it was always like a process. It wasn't like a single person says, this is the guy we need,
Okay.
and then we get him. It's never really black and white like that. But it always starts, okay, there's gonna be a roster change, which can be initiated because the team doesn't work, the players are not happy, the staff is not happy, the organization is not happy, different things. But then it starts, and well, the first thing is you create a list. And when you create a list, you do need the opinion of all the players also. Because you might have, let's say you have five names like me, then let's say Snappy would have five names, the rest of the players. If everyone has five names, then you actually get a big list. Some of the names, of course, are the same already. And then you try to put it in a order. And sometimes, during the times of ends, for example, different names came from different people, actually.
All right.
So it wasn't always like one guy saying this and one guy saying that. And of course, like I said, sometimes it's like everyone will say, okay, this guy is really good. He will fit us in the role we need. He will fit us personality-wise. We have heard really good things of him and so on. But the main responsibility would be on me and Snappy when scouting the players. So it would be creating a list. And then it was, well, me and Snappy watching the demos of the players. I do think in the end I was watching more demos also, well, because of my role compared to his role as the IGL. He wasn't watching as much because he has also other things to focus on, such as his own form and playing the game himself instead of just, this is more like management staff responsibilities. But it was like this, and then Snappy had the biggest say out of the players. I had the final say, and then of course ends as the organization. Well, basically they have the final say when it
Oh,
comes down
sure.
to financial contracts and everything like this. And then it also comes down to, okay, we have this list of players. If we can't go for option number one because of different reasons, what's option two, option three, and so on, going down the list. And then it was a process like this. So not necessarily one guy deciding this is what we do. And then, like for me, for example, if I would be just picking a player, then saying, okay, this is the guy we go, then I talk only with ENS as the organization. Then one day I come to TeamSpeak with the team and, hey, here's your
Sure.
new guy, by the way.
Sure.
And like not talking with them, of course, everyone needs to be included, everyone needs to be heard. But then it has to be also clear that the decision will come from the staff and from the organization. The decision can't be from the players because then you are doing it the wrong way around. If all the power like that is on the players, then there will be personal issues that will limit you getting this and that guy. And then there will be well, different things that's controlling the process, and that's not a good thing for anyone.
One thing I've found very interesting about the player Sphinx is, as you say, the first thing you do notice if you have any eyes in the game is his mechanics are really fucking strong. Obviously, he's a sick aimer. You keep putting him in an aim duel with a rifle. He's going to win a lot against top teams. But I actually think so that even some of the problems he has to this day almost have their genesis in most of his career, which is it seems like his absolute best player was actually when he was in your team, in that end squad where you had that run in 2022. And he already showed he was like really skilled. You guys were in the semis of the major. Then after that, he had that period of vitality where actually early on it was a bit dodgy, actually. Sometimes he used to just have games where, like, you were like, where the fuck's the guy from hence? Like, he's not fragging. Like, he's just not having impact. And then he had that period where obviously they won the major and looked awesome. And the reason I bring up now is, even though to this day stats are mega, like, if you go look, pull up that page on HLTV of players, it's going to show he's one of the best LAN players of the year. He's probably going to be like a top 10 player on HLTV this year. People have noticed, though, he is a star player that can have big games. He sometimes goes missing, though. So I get the sense from talking to people who've been around this player, it's a player where you don't just, it's not just a player where you just set him loose, right, and go just do anything you want. Like, there's some aspect of he's got to be like set up, or he's got to be comfortable, or he's got to have his like idea of his game plan within a round or something. Give me some thoughts on this player. It seems like an interesting sort of star player.
Yeah, I mean, well, my thoughts are of course from the end times, and I do think he has changed after that, like as a player, probably
Right.
also his personality, like even a bit. Not saying like there's a massive change or anything like that,
Sure.
but I think the times we had him in ends, well, he was set up, of course, that he had the roles and he had the space to do his things, and he's a player who also likes to do like calculated decisions where he wants to have some small anti-strat here and there, then give his idea what should he do and what he can do against this and that team. I do think the part that might be missing, or at least that was more visible with Enz, was that he would be more like aggressive, taking a bit more risks here and there. Where nowadays it might be that if he has a decision to make, he chooses the passive one. And it can of course be a full difference, like it can fit Vitality better like that, and with Enz it was a bit different back then. Also because of his experience and everything, I do think he was just a bit more aggressive or a bit more like explosive back with us than what he is now. I do also remember some of the interviews, and this is where I can't say like too much because I don't know how it works in Vitality, but the start was a bit rough. Like he didn't straight up fit in, or at least like looking at how he played, it didn't seem that comfortable. But then after a while, I do remember some of these interviews where I think it was like Sonic and Apex telling him he needs to focus on himself and he needs to be like the star player of the team and so on. And then probably that's how he started to learn like more of his role, and it might also lead more to these passive approaches where he's thinking a bit more selfish. It can be both good and bad for the team, to be honest, because if you are a bit more passive, maybe you are a bit slow on some reactions, but then if you are a bit more aggressive, okay, sure, you might die. But then on the other hand, if you die, you get some info and it can lead to good things for the other players and these kind of things. And how it all affect on stats, well, we don't need to talk about that, I guess, but that's a whole another talk. But I do feel like there's been a small switch up like this where in the past he was more taking more initiative, going for more risky plays, and then it's changed. It comes with experience, I guess. It comes with expectations and different things, and that's at least the way I see it. But like I said, I can't think too much or say too much how it's been going in Vitality because I don't know exactly like what's happening.
When the Ents squad with Sphinx got rolling, obviously one of the first big results was making that final of the Pro League. It was the one that people remember FaZe won early in the year and was one of the tournaments along the road to their Grand Slam. And you guys actually had also already beaten them in the same tournament in the group stage, and then you met them in the final, but it was a BO5, and at that time, obviously, FaZe lost very few times in that kind of setting. What I would ask is this, so the thing I'm always quite fascinated by about people who play professionally is obviously there is like an experience slash learning curve to every part of the game. So even if you're actually in the server, your team, like in this case, you had beaten FaZe, you could beat them, you actually could beat every team at this time. It's clear if people look in this final or in like the semis of the majors, an obvious example as well. Like it's not about if you can beat the other team, a FaZe or an Na'Vi, who are the best teams. It's also about like if people have never been in that setting before, a final or a best of five, or it's the major in the state. There's like people, it takes them a while to figure it out or figure out how to play well or not let nerves get them. Did you find this when the team got to this point? Could you see like, there's areas where inexperience gets to you or maybe cost you a chance to win these matches? What would you say?
In some sense, yes. Not necessarily their feelings or their communication or those kind of things. But for that face match, for example, I remember them not banning Vertigo and then Vertigo being there and we are losing to like B rushes and stuff, which shouldn't be a thing. Sure. And then it happens in a grand final like that. Okay, we are two guys holding B and we are losing to a B rush. Then we are getting faked by a B rush and all these sorts of things. And it didn't necessarily show in communication or emotions or things like this. But then I do also think it's some kind of inexperience where you are playing the other team's perma ban in a best of five in a grand final. It should be a good thing for you,
sure.
To be honest. Like, it should have been a map for us. And I know our record at that time wasn't the best. But I do also think after EPL, Vertigo became like, well, one of our best maps. And sure. Even back then, we had practiced it to the point. So then there was the factor of grand final, this kind of situation where people might feel the pressure. And then the experience would be something that could have helped us. Because that was a missed opportunity with that Vertigo especially.
What about the major? Because I felt like that was one where, like, if people even just look at the game, the team wasn't even in that game. It's like they just got blown out completely.
The Antwerp major?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, those were the first arena matches for us. Where we, well, in the quarters we won Copenhagen Flames, but at the semi-final, well, we played against Navi, and Navi was strong at the time. Like, what were they, number one or number two, something
yeah,
like
yeah.
this. But they were in a strong form, and I don't know, we didn't have any grab of the game. Like, we were just completely out. It felt beforehand that, okay, we should have a really good chance coming into this. We had done all the preparation, everything. I'm not sure even nowadays, like, what went exactly wrong. That one I wouldn't put into the experience part the same way, even though it's an arena match. But I don't know, they were just a better team. They were just, in every aspect of the game, it felt like they were better. There was nothing we could do. And I just remember the empty feeling I had after that match, like, what can we do?
All right.
Because there was, like, no chance, I felt like. It was this kind of sad, empty feeling, because you go into a match, you feel like, okay, we have done everything we should. We should be ready for this match. And then it feels like you never connected to the server, and then you're out. Result-wise, okay, semifinals, all good. But then the way we went out, it was just a sad feeling, to be honest.
It's funny that this most recent IEM Dallas with Stewie 2K, who's obviously a massive name, winning in that like movie anime style fashion is such a crazy story. Because I actually think on paper, even though they won the event, I actually think it's almost crazier what you guys did at Dallas when you had snacks instead of Spinks. Because here's the difference, right? Nico has in-game led before. He's even won tournaments. And obviously, like, Stewie 2K is like a very experienced player. The difference is, in this Ents team at the time, everyone was hyping the fuck out of Spinks. Everyone was basically like, Spinks is like the actual top player, and then the rest are like, you know, all right, or, you know, in fact, at the time, all the conversation was, as soon as he leaves this team, who's going to give a fuck about Ents, right? And you guys went to this IEM Dallas without him, your best player. And at the time, Spinks, Snacks had been years from his prime. This is in fucking 2022, guys. Like, Snacks' prime was in, I don't know, 2016 or 2017 or something, years early. So no one expected anything from this team. And you guys not only beat Fate, you were in the finals. Like, you actually could have won this tournament. Give me some thoughts on this event. Like, I feel like, in a way, it kind of proved the rest of Ents was really good too.
Yeah, actually, now that you said it, I do remember something from, like, maybe before the Dallas event and then after, where Spinks was really hyped, and he was and he still is a good player.
Sure.
There's no denying of that, but at the same time, it wasn't like only him carrying us, so in that way it was a good thing. Probably also to put down Sphinx's ego a bit, where the team can do also good without him. But of course, like, he was a good player, but it was a bit of a surprise with Snacks, of course. But it also proves that the structure and the system can do something. So in that way, well, it was a good thing. And I mean, I guess there's something weird happening in Dallas when it's this
sure.
standing teams doing these runs.
Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? And that's in part thanks to my Patreon community, the Skrilluminati. So this video was kindly supported by Frisky, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Ahmed Haju, Jensen Gore, Tobias Bernasconi, Adam Tomlin, Animosity, Toucan, Tosh, and you know it if you've ever seen my videos before. If you don't, get to know it, because a special thanks goes out to my main man, Jerky's Minion. Wanna ask a question for my video AMA? Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest? Maybe you want to see who the upcoming guests are on my shows, on my interviews. Or do you want to be part of one of those lengthy esports discussions where you set the table of topics? Well, if any of those perks or others catch your fancy, put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today. Where? Via the Patreon link in the description box.